Welcome to the midweek Mission Ridge podcast known as Footnotes. Footnotes is here to give you some of the stuff that we didn't have time to cover in the sermon and encourage you to dig in deeper as you study the text. So let's dive in and check out what's in the footnotes. Greetings and salutations, fellow Mission Ridgers and people gathered around the worldwide web who are listening to our podcast. You're on another episode of Footnotes. This week on Footnotes, we got myself, Logan Daly, Josh Croyle.
Yeah, you kind of stole both of my go-to hello words, so now I'm kind of stumbling to figure out what I'm going to say.
It was moderately on purpose,
but I'm gonna stick with what I just said.
And Rob Croyle.
Yeah, I'm here.
He's here. And we're gonna dig into Mark 12 a little bit and talk about some stuff that didn't fit into this week's sermon.
And maybe if we get into it, the Bible.
Maybe if we get into that.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I don't have time for it.
There might be some time. Something like that. But first up, we got to talk about Paul's shortcomings, which is this week's Logan's shortcomings since I was preaching.
Calling the Sadducees the Pharisees right out of the get-go.
Right out of the get-go, I mixed up those two. So if you listen to the sermon, you probably caught that. Probably didn't make a ton of sense right off the bat there, but
sure,
hopefully you caught on
for the rest of it. You said it the first time, and so the rest of the time you were talking about the Pharisees, and I was trying to figure out which one was the mistake. But then you eventually settled on Sadducees. But then you were also talking about the Pharisees later. So then I was like,
yeah,
I don't.
There was Pharisees, there was Sadducees, there was a lot of C's going on. There's a lot
of
to see in that.
There's
passage.
A Caesar.
There's a Caesar. There's Essenes. Like, seen, saw, seen, Caesar.
Seen
just a lot of.
Seen and heard.
Okay, we're done with that. That's enough of that. So yeah, that's a thing. Also set the record for, I think, the shortest sermon we've had at Mission Ridge, clocking in like 29 minutes. So I'm kind of proud of that, actually.
And it was my day off. It felt especially short for me because it was my day off, so I didn't do setup or teardowns.
So sure. So you just enjoyed yourself.
In and out.
Just loving it. Loving it. It's like McDonald's there. So that's good. First thing we want to talk about, this could also be a little bit of one of my shortcomings, is that I wanted to talk about God putting our leaders over us in the sermon, and it just didn't pop out of my mouth at any given moment, so I didn't talk about it.
Yeah, that's certainly a hard conversation to really get into, especially like with the political climate we are currently facing.
Yes. Probably wouldn't have been. I just needed to make it a 30-minute sermon, and that would have been gone.
Yeah, if you'd just done a normal length sermon, we would have had plenty of time for it.
Yeah, if I would have just ignored the whole 30-minute thing and gone on to 45.
So like, the real shortcoming is that you came up short.
Yikes. So let's talk about that a little bit. Obviously, in 12 here, we've got some conversations involving leadership, specifically. I cued in on the Pharisees and Herodians coming to Jesus and talking about, whether it's okay to pay taxes, submitting to Caesar's rule, kind of in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. I think that something that needs to be said about our current climate and just in general as Christians is, we need to remember that God puts our leaders over us, whoever they might be. Currently, that would be the Donaldist Trumpist that's in in the Oval Office. No matter where you fall on the spectrum there, God allowed Donald Trump to be our president. And there's a reason for that. It might not be clear to us, but he's there in office, and we need to accept that God put him there. In the same way, God put Obama in office before that. And I think that there is one thing that really kind of irritates me. I see on the internet sometimes, and people speaking about as if like one of the political parties is, you know, anointed by God or something. And that's just not, that's not the case, I don't think.
And that's the same argument from 2,000 years ago. I mean, the Jesus' disciples represented every political, religious, social thinking of the time.
Yeah.
And they had that same argument, like, who's the greatest in the kingdom? And that had more to do with ideology than it did, you know,
their personal
value.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, John's faster than Peter, but he also
can't seem to keep his clothes on.
Can't keep,
so.
Yeah, you know, so there's that. You know, Peter says in 1 Peter 2, and I find this striking because he was there when Jesus says, render under Caesar what is Caesar's. And so apparently he learned something from that conversation. Submit yourself for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether to a king as one in authority or to governors as set by him for the punishment of evildoers and the praise of those who do right. For such is the will of God, that by doing right you may silence the ignorance of foolish men, act as free men, and do not use your freedom as a covering for evil, but use it as a bondslave of God. Honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king.
Yeah. No, that's... apparently he picked up a lesson there.
And I think it's challenging because we live in an environment where we have a say, a vote.
Sure.
Where at the time that Peter wrote this, there wasn't a say, there wasn't a vote. at least not for the king.
Yeah.
And so we should be involved in the process. But what I find troubling is over the years, I've watched people from either side of the aisle in the two-party system almost quite literally calling the current president of the time, and I'm talking the last 20 years, almost literally calling them the Antichrist.
Oh, yeah. No,
definitely.
Somebody.
I've legitimately heard from the pulpit of a church, which I will not name, I've heard that about the previous administration, or a previous administration.
I've personally heard it from the past three administrations.
I don't think we can have, if they're all the Antichrist, I don't think that works out logically. How many Antichrists are there? Like, you can't do that. I think lobbing hand grenades at the other side, wherever you're at, that's the exact opposite of what Jesus is doing here in 12 with any of these conversations.
Yeah, he's inviting everybody to come to the middle, like you said in your sermon.
You know, and that's...
And there are valid points on both sides. Like, I used to be far right. I mean, my voting.
Yeah.
But as I've listened to people on the left, and as I've looked at some of the actions of some of the people on the right, I'm like there's some valid points on the left. There's some things that the party that I grew up with, that I'm going, man, if I really listen to Jesus, I can't appreciate what that person is doing or saying right there.
Yeah. I think that's the important thing to remember, is that despite what might happen in the political realm for our country or whatever country you're in, this isn't just an America thing. If you're in Ethiopia, your leaders are put over you. If you're in China, your leaders are put over you. And that's a hard conversation. I'm thinking like Africa.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you honor the, I'm trying to think of in, are they a prime minister in China? I mean, how do you honor that highest
authority? I think they have a president, but it's the Communist Party president. So it's whoever's the dictator leader.
Yeah. How do you honor Castro when Castro was around?
Sure. I'm thinking recently, I just read a thing the other day about in Africa, there's just been tons of killings going on. We haven't really been hearing about that in the news as much, but I think it was it Darfur? It might be Darfur. But recently there's just been a slew of murders, killings of Christians over there. Hundreds being murdered. And how do you accept that? That right there is a pretty good image of what it looks like to, like, yeah, you're still living under Caesar. For some reason, Caesar is still the leader there.
Yeah.
And God has him there for some sort of reason. And I kind of alluded to that of, like, yeah, no, that gave Christianity a place where the sacrificial love and peacefulness of Christianity could blossom and really explode in a lot of ways under the violent rule of Caesar.
And it got worse. Caesars progressively got worse before they ever got better. And the people of Christ, the followers of Christ,
they
face harder and harder and harder circumstances long before. And today, like in America, we do not face persecution. Not like that. And there are small pockets, maybe.
Sure. Like I think of recently in the news, the Unplanned movie. Like, there's been some resistance to that. It's gotten negative critic reviews, and you know, the Twitter account got shut down and stuff like that. So, like, this movie that's moving and doing good things for God's kingdom, met some resistance.
Telling a good story. Telling a story worth considering, for sure.
Nobody making that movie is getting killed.
Yeah.
And put to death for making that movie. So I think it's easy for us to lose sight of that, and especially since we have a say, and be like, well, I did my part, and now I'm, you know, hashtag not my president. Well, no, he's over you, whoever that is, whether that's Trump, Obama, whoever comes up next, they're over you, they're your leader, and God put them there for some reason, and it's our job to remain faithful, and render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. But not forget to render unto God what is God's.
Which segues us into the next thing that we wanted to talk about, Josh, which was the Caesar's image versus the image of God.
Yeah, so last night we were talking about the denarii, the coin. It's got It's got Caesar's image on it. And how the coins weren't allowed in the temple because they were graven images. So when Jesus says, render under Caesar what is Caesar's and render under God what is God's, the question there lies in what is God's? Well, it's the things that bear God's image, which would be us, as we see in Genesis.
Yep.
Yeah, that's so good. And when you said that last night, I even did the little ooh foot tap, like, oh, I got excited about it. because the concept of us bearing the image of God, like, God doesn't care about your coins. He doesn't care about your currency or the actual gifts. He cares about your heart. Like, and we see that with the widow's mite at the end of the story, parallel between those two.
Yeah.
That you can draw between those two stories is strong there because he cares about what you're, like, why you're giving. He cares about your giving of yourself, if you will, because you bear the image of God. He cares about your currency. God's currency is what bears his image. If you, I'm going out on a little bit on a limb there, but God's currency is what bears his image. It's you, your self-sacrifice is what God cares about.
We are his currency.
Yeah.
To the world. And as we, when we put God's image on display in correct ways and in ways that where God jumps up and down and says, yes.
Yeah.
When we do that, we tell a really good story of who our God is, and it is redemptive.
Mm-hmm.
But when we don't, and we're all image bearers, And the question becomes, are we going to try to live that out well?
Sure. Yeah. Where are we putting our sacrifice? Where are we putting our... Where are we valuing ourselves, if you will?
Yeah,
that was some tasty stuff right there, Josh. Yeah. I really love that.
It's my boy.
There you go. But we'll move on from there to our the next thing we wanted to talk about was and I had mentioned this in the sermon that we talk about this was the Sadducees talking about resurrection.
Yeah.
And so in the middle of 12 here, after the Caesar rendered to Caesar what is Caesar's, the Sadducees came to Jesus, and it makes a point of saying that the Sadducees do not believe in resurrection.
Yeah.
And they give Jesus this hypothetical situation, and they're like, here, we want to know what your teaching would be on this. What's your interpretation of the law in this hypothetical situation? And the situation is, it revolves around marriage. And bearing of children. And so if we look in verse 20, there were seven brothers. The first took a wife, and then he died and left no offspring. And the second took her and died and leaving no offspring. Now, in Jewish law, the second brother, if the firstborn so had a wife and didn't sire any children, his next brother would take his place with his wife and would sire children for him. In order to carry on his name.
Yeah, for the first brother.
That's how it would work. Sounds a little weird to us, but this was commonplace for them. This is their custom, their culture. This is out of I believe Leviticus, right?
I believe it is.
You'd have to double check that, but I think that's where you need to look. So the second took her and died, leaving no offspring, and then the third likewise. And they kept going, and the seven left no offspring. Last of all, the woman died. In the resurrection, when they rise again, whose wife will she be? For the seven had her as wife, all seven. So she'd married all seven of these brothers. The brothers had all had her as a wife, but none of them had sired children. So none of them had a stronger claim over her, if you will, right? They're basing their entire discussion around this, like, it hinges on resurrection, which they don't even believe in. Which to me seems like a gaping hole in your argument. So Jesus comes in and slaps him down real hard with this one. He says, is this not the reason you are wrong? Because you neither know the scriptures nor the power of God. Like, hot dang. Busting out the big guns. He's like, you don't know your scriptures. You don't even know the power of God. What are you doing? Get out of here.
Which, to be honest, this, you know, that verse has hit me hard. Like, I'm like, ooh, do I know my scriptures? Ooh, do I know the power of God? Like,
sure.
Like, do I really know the power of God? Because when, you know, Paul, I believe, says that the power that God used to raise Jesus is the same power he's going to use in our circumstances today. But do I picture that being a reality? It is out of Deuteronomy 25, not out of Leviticus.
Okay. But the other thing to maybe cue in on here, and we can discuss about this, is the Sadducees didn't believe in resurrection. So there was debate. There was multiple positions on what the afterlife looked like, what eternal life was, resurrection, how all of that worked. There were multiple interpretations and various camps that people would fall into, and they would debate about this. We still have this to this day. There are various views on hell and eternity and all of that stuff within Christianity. So this is nothing new to us. But I think Jesus does, at the end of this, he answers their question, even though he's like, yeah, this is a garbage question. Like, why you guys are like, he sees through what they're doing.
It's well crafted.
It is well crafted.
They think they've got Jesus cornered.
This is a good question, but he answers it very, very well.
you know, that for when they rise from the dead, they neither marry nor are given a marriage, but are like the angels in heaven, not that they are angels. I think that's to be made clear. And as for the dead being raised, have you not read in the book of Moses in the passage about the bush, how God spoke to him saying, I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. He is not God of the dead, but of the living. You are quite wrong.
You are quite wrong.
Which it's like he's saying it as an English, you know, like I hear a pomp Englishman. You are quite wrong. Alfred from VeggieTales, if you will.
I've got that in the King James Version, so mine reads, ye therefore do greatly err.
So like he's talking to Larry Boy.
ye therefore do greatly err.
And now it's time for Larry to come out and sing a silly song.
And now it's time for Jesus to come out and slap a scribe upside the head. What? Oh, wait, no, this wasn't a scribe. This is a Sadducee.
What I find interesting is because he's talking about, in the passage he's quoting, God's referring to these three people kind of as if they're alive. Because Jesus is saying, oh, he's the God of Isaac and Abraham and Jacob. And he's not the God of the dead, but the God of the living, which I feel like in modern standards is like someone is an Elvis truther.
Oh.
They're like, no, Elvis is still alive.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh. Oh.
Jesus is like, no, these three guys, these that are like the Elvis of early Israel. They're still alive. He's the God of Elvis.
Oh, man.
He's not the God of the dead.
He's the God of Elvis. He's not the God of the dead. Oh, that's... I know, that's a good point. Like, he's really kind of... He slaps them down hard on this one. He's like, you guys don't know anything. You know nothing, Jon Snow. Just... Oh, man. Now is the time when Jesus comes out and cooks a chicken by slapping it so hard. That's good stuff there. And obviously there's more going on with this. You can dig into this more. We would encourage you to do so. If you find cool theories, go ahead and let us know on that one. But we wanted to parse that out a little bit more here. So then, because of this, because of how good he talks to the Sadducees about this stuff, a scribe hears him and comes to him with another question.
Yep.
About what is the greatest commandment, which was, I mentioned on Sunday, is a common debate between two leading rabbis of the time, Hillel and Shammai.
Yep.
I can't remember which one falls on which side of the debate, but the debate was between love the Lord your God with all your might, that being the greatest, you know, is the greatest commandment to love God, or is the greatest commandment to love people?
Well, actually,
or something like that.
Yeah, and we could
clarify this.
This could have been a shortcoming. I forgot about this. So, I believe Shammai said that the greatest command is love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and the second like it is obey the Sabbath.
That's right.
The lens through which you look at how am I loving God is through Sabbath. How are you keeping Sabbath? Which some of the Pharisees, like, that was their big deal. That's why over and over and over again we see the Pharisees, or some of the Pharisees,
getting after Jesus for doing things on Sabbath that he probably shouldn't have.
Why are you healing on Sabbath? Like, have you not heard our rabbi talk about this?
Yep.
And then the second, Hillel said that loving your neighbor as yourself is the lens by which you can tell if you're loving God.
You might have those two flipped.
You might have those two flipped.
I think it might be Shammai that had that. But regardless, one of them had this. So
the lens of, like, how do you love God? And Jesus is definitely affirming one of the two stances.
I'll look it up during this podcast, and we will clarify, because that's...
Which one? I'm moderately sure it's Shammai was the one that he affirmed. But, he comes up with this, and he says, and you will love the Lord your God with all your hearts, with all your soul, and with all your mind, and all your strength. The second is this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. So he's affirming this, that there is no other commandment greater than these. And the scribe said to him, "You are right, teacher. You have truly said that he is one, and there is no other beside him. And to love him with all the heart, and with all the understanding, with all the strength, and to love one's neighbor as oneself is much more than all the whole burnt offerings and sacrifices." So he's saying, loving your neighbor, loving God and loving your neighbor is much more important than anything we do here in the temple. Anything about sacrificing and atonement and anything like that, like none of that matters if we don't get those two right. And Jesus cues in on this and says, you are not far from the kingdom of God, because Jesus had seen that he answered wisely. And so they have this little back and forth there, and they're really kind of patting each other on the back in a lot of ways. The scribe is like, yeah, this is what I thought. And Jesus is like, nope, you got that right.
It was Hillel.
It was Hillel? Yeah. Okay. So Hillel said that. So I was definitely wrong on that one. I always get those two mixed up. Shammai, Hillel.
Just Hillel comes first in alphabet. That's,
okay.
I don't know.
So Hillel said, loving your neighbor as yourself is the bigger. So the other guy's just a sham. That's how I'll remember it. Just
Shammai.
A sham. He's just a sham I am. That's so silly.
Take the log out of Sham's eye.
That's a sham to take that out of your eye. How many more puns can we come up with on this
I think that'll have to do it.
Where's JT when you need him?
We're just going to have... It's a heavy hill to climb. the thing to talk about here is that the scribe... This is Rob and Logan theoretical time. We think that the scribe is an Essene. Because each of the groups, like all of your groups, there's scribes that would come from the Sadducees, from the Pharisees, like there's scribes scattered throughout all of these groups. But we think that this sounds like an Essene scribe. There are obviously scribes that would be Essenes because they're all about copying down the text. They're heavy into the scribe life, if you will. This is also going to be an Essene sort of, they're going to follow that. They believe in this. Obviously the temple system, they've removed themselves somewhat, but they're still priests within the Shema or within the, Essene community. And they're going to come and they're going to serve their time at the temple. Yep. This is like Zechariah, John's father.
Yep.
I think I got that right.
Mm-hmm.
John the Baptist. Yeah.
Historians father. Clearly identify John the Baptist as an Essene.
Zachariah is not an Essene, it's still likely because Zachariah and Elizabeth, is that his wife, they had John at such an old age, and the Essenes were known for adopting orphans.
So. And it's very likely that if Zechariah wasn't actually an Essene, he was at least a sympathizer because we're told that he doesn't buy into the, like, he's a righteous priest as opposed to one of the corrupt ones that is
you know,
part of the Sadducee mafia, if you will.
In his response to Jesus, after Jesus identifies, you know, the grace commandment, seems to lend itself. And when he says that, you know, the loving your neighbor and loving God is more important than burnt offering, then, you know, that really seems to lend itself to the
idea of the temple system. What we got going on here is not the most important thing. We'll still play our part, but it's not the most important thing.
And then, you know, Jesus later on calls out scribes and doesn't seem to apply it to this particular scribe. So I think it seems like this scribe is of a different camp than the scribes that
Jesus is calling out next.
Now I'm going to take us a little off the rails here, but just because we mentioned Zechariah and I really want to talk about, so Zechariah is of the order of Abiah, okay. Which we actually have.
Abiah?
Order
of Abiah?
That's how it is in this translation.
Okay.
I've also heard it Abijah. It's, you know,
right.
Ancient language.
Depends on if you're speaking French or English or
sounds
German
good to me.
Or,
so can, yeah. Order of Abijah. Continue. Sorry,
so we have And before we had to re-record that, Dad, you pointed out that we have records that actually go back far enough to where we can say, okay, he was of this order, order. This is the time of year when he would be serving.
He would be, yep.
And this actually is really interesting because in Luke, he points out when Elizabeth's pregnant, and you can actually do some maths there, and I won't go into all the specifics, but to determine that Jesus would probably have been born later in the year. So somewhere between September and September, November, you know, just
that,
being generous.
That range. Area.
And I like to think, and this is going to be heavily heavily cautioned that this is just a theory that I buy into.
We are far out in the draw.
Way out in the...
Was he born on September 3rd? Is that your thought?
No, not on September 3rd. That would be my birthday, and that's the joke there.
Oh.
No, I fall under the belief that Jesus was born around the Festival of Sukkot.
Okay.
Because that falls into that time of year. That
sure.
would be late September.
Okay.
And I like to think that because the Festival of Sukkot, or the Festival of Tabernacles, is celebrating when God dwelt among us, which
oh.
is what a tabernacle, that's...
He tabernacled,
so,
yes, that's...
So
oh.
wouldn't it be so much like God to send his son to dwell among us...
During the festival,
during the
celebrating
festival of Sukkot.
God dwelling among... Oh!
And wouldn't that be a great time to go ahead and do a census, like people are going
sure.
to
people
gather.
Are, that
you,
would also
you don't
explain
have to go
why
out to the
people
country.
Are.
The country's going to come to you.
Yeah.
Ha! Shout dang, Josh. That's why we keep putting you on this thing. Like,
I don't know. What
I can't
about.
Take credit for all of
sure,
that.
Sure.
I should put that out there.
But you're.
I am not the biggest.
You're bringing. You're bringing pieces to the table. That is some tasty vittles right there.
I've been
there.
Eating the crumbs from
go
much
and,
smarter men.
Go and research that some more.
Yeah,
go think about that a little bit. I'm sorry, I wanted to bring that up because
no,
I know you guys
good.
Talked more about the Festival of Sukkot recently, and I didn't get to be in for that conversation. I just
yeah, we did.
To,
we did. That was
wanted to tie that in here.
No, that was good. Because
you
was,
said
oof.
You said Zechariah, and I was like, oh, I wanted to talk about
Here's
that.
Here's my moment.
Here's my moment. It's not completely off topic. It's a little bit on topic.
I can barely make a connection.
Jumped Gospels for a second. But, you know, it's fine.
Oh,
back to Mark.
Back
to our
Mark.
Regularly
oh,
scheduled podcast here.
Well, I don't think you're quite wrong on that one. I think that was... You're not quite wrong.
Not quite wrong.
I was subscribed to that.
Oh... Ooh, subscribe to that. My goodness. Beware the puns. The next one is Beware the Scribes. That's
beware
what we're
beware
to
the scribes.
Talk about. Beware the Scribes. The scary, scary scribes. I didn't talk about this one a lot on Sunday because there's more to parse out on this. And so we'll talk about it here a little bit. So in verse 38... Jesus does the teaching about the Son of Christ and then leads into this Beware the Scribes in 38. And in his teaching, he said, "Beware of the scribes who like to walk around in long robes and like greeting in the marketplaces and have the best seats in the synagogues and the places of honor at feasts, who devour widows' houses for a pretense, make long prayers. They will receive the greater condemnation."
I feel like there's a joke to be made here about how long Paul takes to pray, but we'll, for the sake of time, we'll just gloss over
that.
Oh,
how have I never... I hope he doesn't listen to this one, and that we get to spring that on him the next time he's...
You're...
leading the pre-service prayer.
Yeah, to be clear... Josh is talking about the pre-service prayer. And it's actually not the prayer that's long.
It's,
no,
it's not
preamble.
The prayer.
It's the
preamble
to the prayer.
It's the wind-up, not
that's
the pitch.
The, oh,
but
man.
He's looking to invest. Look, totally different. Like, it's funny.
I'm not calling
actually
Paul
but,
a scribe for his long
he's
garments.
He's not scribe-esque.
If he'd trip over the long garments.
He would.
You know, yeah, he would.
Zing.
but speaking of, you know, like there being scribes of different You know, the Pharisees had their scribes, Essenes had their scribes, Sadducees had their scribes.
Sure,
the high priests had their scribes. This is talking about the chief seats in the synagogues. The synagogues were places that were away from Jerusalem,
yep,
where the people could gather for teaching and for studying the word. We have how many Bibles in this room?
There's a lot.
Well, those are all hymnals, yeah, actually, right, that we're looking at. There's a stack of books that look old. I've got four of them. I've got four different Bibles on my desk.
Physical copies.
One,
yeah,
here.
I'm holding.
Yeah.
At least
my pocket Bible here.
At least seven.
At least seven in this room, right?
In this room.
I mean, that's not,
yeah,
counting the fact that each one of us has one to two
mobile devices
on our person currently.
That has
countless translations.
I see where you're going.
Every language.
Yeah. So of that time, first century.
Yep.
Of that time, to have a scroll for one community, and as one Isaiah scroll for a whole community to have one Isaiah scroll, unheard of. Like, they would share portions of these scriptures,
sure,
and they would rotate them around. And if you were a scribe, like, that's like, you're somebody becoming a doctor or a lawyer, someone who's gonna, or becoming,
sure,
pro
that's
baseball
a prestigious,
player. Yeah, that is.
It's your son being Elvis right there.
It's your son being Elvis.
Your son being Elvis? I mean,
I'm taking a full circle.
Oh, man.
There's an Elvis-based chiasm in this podcast.
Oh, jeez.
For any of you looking for it.
We don't know where the middle's at.
Like, I could imagine the fame that would come with being a scribe. I mean, you are the one that's,
sure,
helping the people actually have access to the scroll.
This is the word of God that,
yeah,
you're a conduit of.
And
yeah.
You know, I was talking with a family this last week, and their daughter, she found in college, she found that music theory is something that she just really gravitates towards and totally understands. And all her classmates, whenever someone speaks, one of the professors is speaking, they all kind of lean towards her and go, "What is he saying?
Translate this.
Tell us what's going on here." And I think the scribes were that for the people. Like, tell us, what does God mean here?
Put this in our terms.
Help us out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and Jesus is saying, don't get caught up in that.
Sure. Sure. And don't take this more seriously. And don't abuse your position.
Don't abuse your position.
Yeah.
This is, you need to be, you're not submitting your sacrifice properly.
It's almost like James 3, teachers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you got to be held to a
higher standard.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Let
That's
not
good.
Many of you become teachers.
That's good stuff. I would recommend checking that out more. Maybe bring that up in your care group. Parse that out a little bit if you're hearing this. This entire chapter is thick with heavy teaching that has a lot of layers to it. A lot of layers on that onion, on that cake, on that parfait, if you will.
Yeah.
That was a nice tandem right there. That was good.
In all the Gospels, they spend a significant amount of time of Jesus last week, and the conversations that he had, they seem to be some of the most poignant conversations, mm-hmm, from the Gospel writer perspective. Mark, we chose Mark so that we could cover an entire Gospel and present this as a one book. Yeah, and the themes within it, because,
sure,
it is short, so we could do this within Lent season. But, you know, look at John, look at Matthew, look at Luke, and the conversations. Like, there's more. Like, this is the Cliff Notes version in Mark versus the other gospel writers. But
yeah,
these conversations
are so important
about what it means to live out for the kingdom.
Yeah, and we're giving you the Cliff Notes of the Cliff Notes, if you will.
Yeah.
Because while the Mark is this action comic strip this happened, then this happened, then this happened, right? He doesn't mess around and spend a lot of time waxing eloquent.
Nope.
And we're taking that and we're also like condensing that down and zipping through this at a fast pace. So it's important to, you're not going to get all of this on a Sunday morning. You're not going to get this into, you know, two recordings in a week. This takes some time and effort to dig into the text and get to know, like, do you know your scripture?
Yeah.
Do you know the power of God?
Ooh.
How are you going to do that if you're not spending time in the text?
Yeah.
We have to be doing that as a community. We have to be digging in. Dig into this stuff. It's good. And it's not going to come back void. Like, you don't have to be a biblical scholar. None of us in this room are super, super intelligent, biblical scholarly type people.
I mean, we left Paul out of the conversation this week, so...
Just so that we could all be a bunch of dunces.
Yeah, super intelligent biblical scholar has left the building.
So, let that be said. But some of that comes from getting together to do this. So I said it last week, I'm going to say it again. Like, you got to do this in community. If you don't have a community of people that you can be wrestling with the text in, then you're missing out. Because I wouldn't have come up with the Caesar's image versus image of God without Josh. And we wouldn't have had the Zechariah connection without Josh and the Sukkot thing without Josh. And Josh wouldn't have had, I don't know, maybe a couple of better jokes without me. Like, I don't bring a lot to the table, but there was at least the English thing and the razzle-dazzle with Jesus. Got to razzle-dazzle him. So, like, you need community to dig into the text. It's always better with other people.
Yeah.
To bring ideas and parse them out and say, yeah, no, I don't think that's right. Or yes, I do think that's right.
Yeah.
And if Logan hadn't, you know, messed up the recording and had to go back and redo it, we wouldn't have had a lot of those fun tangents that we went on.
I don't know what you're talking about, Josh.
Josh,
we didn't have to go back and re-record anything.
We are a one-record wonder.
Yeah, obviously we didn't go for 15 minutes without having the recording going. I don't know what you're talking about, Josh.
I apparently don't.
You are quite wrong.
You're quite wrong.
You are quite wrong.
You do greatly err.
Oy vey. Anyway, that's probably a good place to leave her there. Thanks for joining us. And if you're interested in getting into a care group or anything like that, hit up Rob or myself. You can email us at info@missionridge.church. We'll get you plugged in. If you're hearing this and you're not a part of our church, but you're like, I want to come check out these hooligans. They sound like fun people. We promise we don't bite too much. We're up to date on our shots.
Yes, we are.
So check us out at the Hilton Garden Inn Conference Center on Sundays at 10:30. It'd be a great time to come meet us. If not, just drop into our offices during the week. Look us up. We're easy to find on the web. If you don't like what we're saying and you got complaints or want to yell at us, they can go to gus@liferotp.com.
Complaints department.
That's our complaints department. He'll be happy to handle all of those. I hear he's also selling a guitar or something like that. Usually selling something on Craigslist, that Gus guy.
Yes, he is.
Anyways.
Sometimes it's his.
Sometimes it's his. Sometimes it's not. We just don't know. But anyway, those are a lot of inside jokes there. We would love to have you join us. And thanks for joining us for another episode of We Ramble Through the Footnotes of the Bible. And maybe come up with some good stuff. Hashtag help.
Help.
Thanks for joining us. Have a good week. Bye.
You've been listening to Footnotes on the Mission Ridge Podcast. For more information about Mission Ridge, please visit our website at missionridge.church. Thanks for tuning in. We hope the rest of your week is straight up hashtag blessed, and that you'll join us again next week for more footnotes.